You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Welcome to Pickle Me This, the officially unofficial podcast for Rick and Morty on Cartoon Network's Adult Swim. I'm your host, Jim.
And I'm Aaron.
You can subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Today we're covering Season 2, Episode 10, The Wedding Squanchers. Here's Aaron with the recap.
Bird Person is to be wedded to Tammy, and the entire Smith family is invited. Rick is guilt-tripped into attending, where he's forced to dismantle the emotional walls and armor he's built over his life one piece at a time and allow himself to feel feelings of genuine love and friendship. He achieves this feat just in time for Federation troops to invade Bird Person's sham wedding, kill several of his friends, and send his family into hiding on backwater Earth substitutes. Despite the betrayals confirming his worst fears about what can happen when you trust and connect with people, he allows himself to be captured by the authorities so his family can have a chance of stability without him. A most un-Rick move, to say the least.
All right, Aaron, what do you think of this episode?
Well, it's another one of those kind of X-File-style myth arc episodes, which I love so much. It's actually moving the plot of the show forward. I think it's very funny. I thought there was a lot of really clever writing. Like the bird person vows, Tammy's like, "You are my seed, my worm, my earliness, my lack of cats." I thought was really funny. The "Can you make me a grand or a dumb grandson" pep talk. It's one part lame advice about stuff you know nothing about and a whole lot of vodka. I thought there's a lot of really cool badass Rick stuff, like his portal gun self-destruct sequence was righteous. Squanchy's toothpaste super squanch serum.
I'm the Jugger Squanch.
Bid, right, and resulting rampage was really entertaining. Yeah. I thought it ended on the right kind of melancholy, soul-searching note that I'm used to on these type of episodes of Rick and Morty. What'd you think?
Yeah, no, I agree with all that. I like these myth arc episodes. It's kind of the thing that I keep looking forward to in the Rick and Morty verse. Like all of the other stuff starts to feel like cotton candy at some point. And this is the stuff I crave. But, you know, I come from a long history of serialized television.
Sure.
So that's just my proclivities.
It's our bread and butter, and that's as far away from cotton candy as you can get.
Yeah. And I guess, like, seeing Rick struggle with his own emotional, you know, hang-ups and stuff was interesting to me.
Let's get into the episode. I feel like that there is three parts that we could discuss. There's the wedding, there's the exile, there's the Rickdemption, possibly Rickdemption at the end. I thought it was cool that the whole thing is set on Planet Squanch. Although they don't really do, I was hoping to see like some more Squanchies, like, you know, the race of Squanchies. Maybe he owns, maybe he just is the planet.
Yeah, it might be a very small planet.
Yeah, he's just, he's a Squanchy, and he's from the planet Squanch, and he's the only native species, intelligent species of that planet. But there's a, let me ask you something. Like when the courier flap shows up and grabs Jerry, I thought it was interesting that Rick said, "What do you know about friendship, Jerry?" Was it accidental? Did he mean to ship Jerry in the meat flap, or because he enunciated, but he also kind of does that too,
right? I think it was an accident.
Like, what do you know about science, Morty? It just so happened that this was a trigger word.
Are you thinking there's some like subconscious desire to go to Bird Person's wedding that's manifesting in that moment?
That's exactly what I was getting at, because I was trying to put like, is there a subconscious or conscious desire? Because when I look at the acting on Rick's animated face, it did seem like he was genuinely surprised that Jerry was sent. And it's like, ah, oh, fuck. Well, now we got to go pick him up at the very least.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, we know Rick's a master manipulator, and maybe he secretly wants to go, but he doesn't want to admit that he has these kind of feelings to his family at large.
Yeah, this is the thing I'm struggling with. Like, what is Rick's hang up about, you know, going to this wedding, about seeing his friend married? And why is it so hard for him to accept? And is it just some kind of jealousy of Tammy? Like, is he going to miss the time he spent with Bird Person? I find that hard to believe because he doesn't seem to spend that much time with Bird Person, but like, what is his hang up? Why doesn't he want to go?
It's an interesting question because there's a couple of reasons it could be. I think the surface reading is like what you said, that he is jealous of Tammy, that, you know, maybe he and Bird Person's big adventures are far behind them, but, you know, when your college buddies start getting married, that's when everything, you know, it's no longer...
The potential is gone to have those adventures.
Yeah, it's now, like, right? Hey, maybe I could get Bird Person once a year to come to a big rager I throw at my son-in-law's house. But he gets married and starts having hatchlings, and all that shit's going to go out the window. But also, like, they make a point, which they've hinted at, but that Rick and his Squanchy and Bird Person and several of the other people at his wedding are intergalactic terrorists, or seen as such by the lawful government of the Federation. And like, it's kind of maybe insanely crazy to form an attachment deep enough that you'd want to formalize in marriage, because that's something that can be used against you. Like, it might be just I don't want the feds grilling the stupid teenage Earth girl with their hot, you know, insect pinchers and having her squealing, and that's going to come back on me.
And it turns out, if that's the case, then yeah, he's right.
Right.
Because it did come back, like, right, immediately.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I have a question. I mean, maybe we can talk about it now. Was this the Federation's plan? Because I don't know that I buy... In a prestige drama, certainly animated sci-fi cartoon bonanza, maybe that the Federation put a teenage girl or a teenage girl simulant in Summer's high school, on the off chance that a Bird Person would come by, and then she would romance him, and then they get married, and there'd be like, it seems, but maybe I don't know. Maybe,
well, like, there's somewhere in that stream where they hijacked her, right? Like,
so, okay.
I think it's after she hooked up with Bird Person, then they come to her and they say, hey, you're hooking up with an international terrorist. You're complicit now in some of these things. We're throwing the book at you unless you can...
Do you think it's possible that she's a robot? Because her parents are. And I wonder, like, when Bird Person... Like, they got wind of her relations with Bird Person, and they just snatched her up and replaced her and her family. Or I also, I guess, could buy that maybe the Federation knew where Rick was. So instead of just busting him, they laid, like, you know, maybe there's several people in the Smithstown that are replicants or Federation agents, and they're just, you know, biding their time, collecting information, seeing the goings and comings of Rick's out, you know, kind of like running a stakeout. It's like The Wire season one.
Yeah.
You don't roll up the Barksdale organization the first time you catch him riding dirty. No, you want to get everybody, right?
Uh-huh.
So I guess... that all kind of sort of tracks.
Yeah, I'm hoping they explore that.
Yeah.
You know, because that's one of the big questions I have, is just like, how did the Federation know about this? When did they get to Tammy? Like, all that stuff. I would really appreciate an episode on that.
Did you think that Rick's turn towards like family and connection and accepting his friend falling in love and what change that would mean for him, do you think it was genuine?
You know, if you ask Rick tomorrow whether or not he remembers that, I'm not sure he would say yes.
Yeah.
Like, because he's so fucking drunk during this wedding.
That's true.
Like, he just gets progressively drunker and drunker, and he might be at that point just blacked out.
Is there ever a time in this episode series that he's sober, though? Like,
you know, no, but he's extra drunk during this wedding. Like, you see him when they're exchanging vows, and he is just, like, slouched in his chair, drooling down his face.
That's true.
Like, just going, just making terrible noises.
But I also felt like they did a pretty good job within the episode to kind of hold his character by the hand and have him, like, you know, have these progressive talks with his friends, with his family, with Morty in particular, where he started thinking, like, maybe this nihilism shit is like, what's the use of like hiding out from a Federation and living life as a freedom fighter if you know, if your friends don't have the freedom to fall in love? Like, if you can't fall in love and follow your dreams, then what good is galactic freedom in the first place?
And as a nihilist, he should probably be considering that.
Yeah, yeah. But I also, like, we got just a ton of, like, information dropped. And the funny part is, like, this is Beth's golden opportunity to get to know her father in a way that she could never know before. Like, all these crazy bird people and squanch people. Mm-hmm. And she has this conversation with Bird Person, which I love because, like, at first I'm like, wow, he's just really forthcoming with all this shit. But then it's like, I am very drunk and I probably shouldn't be saying this. But they're talking, nothing that he says is penetrating.
Or it is. Like, I feel like Beth is understanding it, but she is so gung-ho about getting to know his friends that she's doing the polite party thing, like, to the nth degree, right? Where you're just like, oh, yeah, I agree with everything you say, and, you know, really just try and get in there and talk and not offend anybody. And so the things that Bird Person's saying, she's registering that they're true, but she's not registering how big of a deal she needs to make about it.
It's because what do you think? It's almost like she was looking for some kind of emotional truth about Rick and how he feels about his family, where Bird Person's just dealing. It's kind of like, I think it's there because, like, you know, Beth was thinking these are like, oh, you're an old war hero or you're an old war buddy of Rick's. And Birdman's like, well, the war is far from over. We live in hiding. Mm-hmm. Like, he's explaining all of the context would answer all of the emotional questions that she has. But because he's not saying like, oh, yeah, he talks about you all the time and he's always talking about how much he loves his daughter and his grandkids, like, that's, she thinks it's like, oh, it's like talking to a brick wall.
Gotcha.
I don't know. I got more to say about this in the spoiler section, but I do love the, like, goddamn, if Rick was I choose to believe that Rick was genuine in his, like, as much as a drunken, sentimental kind of maudlin Rick can be in this moment of his friend's wedding, that he was genuine when he's given that kind of best man speech.
Well, I mean, I think, like, sometimes people are the most genuine when they're blitzed and they, you know, don't have the filters that they would normally have.
In vino veritas, as they say.
Right.
I also love the squanchy kind of petulantly taking his BFF bracelet and kind of tossing it on the table after. He's like, oh, my best friend's getting married. But I choose to believe that that was a genuine, like, he had made an emotional milestone here. Mm-hmm. And I love how, like, instantly, as the second that he opened himself up to this possibility, the universe brutally proved him that this is what can happen when you trust people. This is what can happen when you're honest. And, like, Beth tries to, like, call him on, like, how could you put our family in danger? How could you not tell us this stuff? He's like, oh, should I have been more open and honest? I fucking love that whole rant. The fuck you, fuck the government, fuck me for having let my guard down. And Moore's like, you can't say fuck you to your granddaughter. Oh, yeah? Dessert. Here's dessert. Fuck you. it would be shitty to have him in your family and to hear those things, but it's so fucking funny when it's a cartoon guy saying it.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, the sit your bird ass down. And then she shoots him, and he has that kind of, like, it even is captioned as weak caw-caw. Birdman's kind of like death throes. I thought that was really great.
Is was that in the episode if you didn't have captions on?
Or? Yeah, you could hear him, but it's just kind of like him going caw-caw, but it was captioned as weakly caw-caw.
Okay, I didn't have captions on.
Yeah, and then, of course, the whole fucking escape. Mm. It was like, awesome, because you're seeing them using, like, all this crazy technology. There's, like, super cool dudes at the party, Squanchy turning into Squatchzilla, and even them, like, stealing the catering, and the fact that they're releasing these worms is kind of like a James Bond oil slick that's fouling all the Federation's engines and stuff. I thought was really amazing.
Yeah, and then, you know, Rick has to find them a new place to live, and things get crazy there, too.
The period of exile begins with kind of the quest for a new Earth. Uh-huh. I mean, this is just funny science fiction shit.
It is. I got a question for you. Which planet do you choose? So there are three planets, right? There's Small World, there's Onacob World, and there's Screaming Sun World.
I mean,
Screaming Sun World is out. 100%. Yeah.
Because here's the thing. I don't know what's dangerous about everything on the Cobb World. If it's like fundamentally inimical to life, then I don't know why the Screaming Sun World with noise canceling headphones wouldn't be a thing you could do.
Okay.
Although my question is like, why is the sun screaming?
Mm-hmm.
Like, what does the sun know about this solar system that we don't? It's just as bad as everything on the Cobb World.
Maybe it's screaming because they're there. Maybe if they weren't there, it wouldn't be screaming.
Oh, Jesus. Well, that's like if the sun rose on a planet devoid of intelligent life.
Uh-huh. And there's no life
to hear it scream. Would it scream at all?
Right.
But you're just taking it further. And it's like, no, it just doesn't scream.
It doesn't scream when they're not there.
But, you know, the small planet, it's just limiting.
Very,
yeah.
Very.
You build a log cabin, you just deforested a planet. You cook up bacon.
They talk about, the bacon, and they hunted it to extinction for breakfast. You can't sustain life on a planet like that.
But it's, because, like, that's the other brilliant thing is, like, it's not just a sight gag. Mm-hmm. The idea that Rick can go walk to the other pole, which gives his family time to be alone, and he can also crawl through the planet core to mm-hmm. be underneath their cabin as they're discussing, like, what a pain in the ass is. I mean, that's the thing. If they were just bitching about how bad he was, I don't think Rick, it doesn't move his emotional barometer.
Yeah.
But because it's they're leavening that with Beth and not just Beth, but like Summer and Morty saying, mm-hmm. look, you love a person unconditionally and we don't want him to leave. And we love
Rick. I think that's fucking wrong.
Really?
Yeah. I'm not your assessment of what they're saying. But their ideals on life. Letting someone else live your life because you're too scared to lose them is a fucked up way to live. It's a bad way to live for everyone involved.
It is. I wonder, I mean, I guess what I would say is like unconditional love does not mean unconditional support. Cause like I can see like if you're like, you know, like if Morty comes addicted to heroin because his doctor prescribed him for pain pills for his femur being broke because of some Rick shit, like he could do some pretty heinous shit. And at some point maybe Beth has to give him some tough love, but do you ever stop loving him? I don't know.
Yeah, there's certainly a distinction to be made between love and support, like you said, but you cannot let him live your life for you.
Given someone that you love a blank check.
Simply because he will leave if you do.
Right. Giving someone a blank emotional check because you love them is super unhealthy.
Oh, yeah.
So
I think Jerry's actually right in this scenario. There are a few occasions where I agree with Jerry.
Yeah.
I think he's got the right of it, and I think this is one of those.
The thing is, like, I wonder, though, if Jerry... I mean, Rick makes it an easy case for him to hate him, but like, I wonder if like Rick was just a normal grandpa that was down on his luck. I bet that Jerry bitches just as much because
he might not be doing it for the right reasons.
Like Rick gave him some good reasons, like the fact that our family are now wanted intergalactic terrorists by association. But like, if mm-hmm. he was just a rival for Beth's love and affection, I think it would irritate him in a deep way that he would engineer things.
You're right.
Because Jerry's just that kind of guy.
He's that petty and pathetic.
I don't know.
Rick has his own flag.
Hmm?
Rick has his own flag that he plants in the South Pole.
What is it? You're right. He does. I forget what it looks like. Does it look anything
like...
It's like
a circle with an R in
it? So it's like... It's essentially...
It's kind of like
Council
the
of
Council,
Rick-ish?
But not really.
Hmm.
Yeah.
I don't know, Rick.
I feel like that's dangerously close to establishing your own council there.
Right. I mean,
Rick
sure,
Prime.
It's 10% different, so your fair use is covered, but like what kind of Rick plants a Rick flag?
It's a council of one, but mm-hmm. still might be a council.
Mm-hmm. It's still something that you hold allegiance to, even if it's to yourself. I don't know, maybe that checks out. Then you have the redemption phase of this episode. Which I think my favorite part is him giving the tip to the criminals, to the Federation as Jerry Smith.
Oh, and his which is just, I'm Jerry and I lick shafts and testicle
I love sucking
and
big sweaty boners. Uh-huh. But it's funny because he's, you know, by doing this as Jerry Smith, because allows his family to live this, you know, peaceful life and probably even a privileged life on Earth. It seems like he's like, hey, look at, mm-hmm. you know, if we do this thing, this is pretty, you know, you're going to take care of us.
Certainly get them off the hook at the very least.
Yeah. But he also can't help but like get a couple digs at. And I love the guy's reaction, kind of like, Okay.
Thanks for that info.
I wonder if they note that in his file.
Like, probably.
Is there
I hope that comes back.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. Like, it would be hilarious if there's like some kind of note on his file.
Or maybe they try and lure Jerry in somehow with like boners and testicle sacks.
Right. That's what I'm saying. If they ever try to bribe him in the future, or if he's ever presented some kind of alien dinner and it's like some kind of fucking Indiana Jones Temple of Doom,
yeah,
and this is
a
table full of sweaty boners and disgusting furry testicle sacks.
Oh, speaking
this,
of which,
this we checked it. This is what you said you liked.
Right. Why isn't he taking the bait?
Yeah.
Speaking of
the boners aren't big and sweaty enough. More sweat. Engorge them.
The Indiana Jones thing, there's a salad version of that in this episode, right?
Yes.
The salad person, they open up the monkey head and it's got salad in it and they freak out.
What's funny is I never got the joke that it's a plant person. Literally until I...
How could you not?
Because
I
just...
The joke, it's right there.
I just thought it was funny that, like, it's just an alien kind of, you know, misunderstanding.
It's horrifying that it would have salad in its head, period.
Right, like, that's just a joke that, like, in, you know, it's almost like a bizarre... on, you know, like, Superman is bizarro. It's like a bizarro world. Aliens or monkey heads filled with salad is what's repulsive.
Okay.
But...
I guess it's a tenuously connected joke, anyway.
I mean, it worked. I still chuckled. It's just like...
It's not like there were humans in the monkey head in Indiana Jones, right?
Right, true.
That would be weird.
It wasn't like Planet of the Apes.
Yeah.
You know, where you've got literally monkeys eating monkey brain heads.
Yeah.
But it's still, it worked with as just a rant. You know, there's just so much kind of random humor in Rick and Morty anyway. Mm-hmm. The Hurt song with, you know, Rick going away to prison, contrasted with his family realizing that has abandoned them and then returning to Earth. It's a great song.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like is of all the like deep melancholy pop song gut punches, this is the least.
Because it's so mainstream. Punchy. Like everybody's heard Hurt many, many times mm-hmm. in many scenarios. And I feel like the stuff they did with Chaos when Rick tries to kill himself was more effective because I didn't know the song. I wasn't like singing along with the song.
Right.
I was just feeling the song.
Right. Right.
And it's harder to do that with a song I'm intimately familiar with.
Yeah. Plus, it's like, you know, Trent Reznor singing about, you know, drug addiction and being in the depths of these. It's almost like the song is heavier than the subject matter. Whereas in the Chaos,
yeah.
like, I felt like that was a nice little blend.
Uh-huh.
But, what are you going to do?
And then Earth has totally changed. You know, the Federation has, in the span of, I don't know how long, taken over... Earth,
yeah.
they've merged it into the Federation and they've roboticized it to like up the wazoo.
Auto dispensing drugs. That's where I'm at. I want a vending machine to roll past and be like, you need to pick me up.
Uh huh.
Here's some free drugs.
I call it coffee.
Where are you at on cereal? Is the crucial part of it to keep it 70% above the milk?
No, I do exactly what Jerry does.
Really?
Yeah, he's got it. You know,
you don't want to get soggy,
right?
I've never thought of that because like my
and I mix it to where like most of the milk has soaked into the cereal, but in a good ratio to where it becomes just a little soft but not soggy.
Yeah, because you don't want like raw Captain Crunch coming at your palate.
Oh no,
there's a little bit of
Trent Reznor is singing about in that song.
My mouth's a bloody hole. And then I guess the stinger, Mr. Poopy Butthole, poor guy. Speaking of addicted to the drugs because he can't get off the painkillers.
Because he got shot.
Yeah.
By Beth.
And I like how they're leaning into like, we'll be back in a year, maybe year and a half, which I think they undersold by like 6 months, right?
Yeah, I think you're right.
Maybe it was like 2.5 years in between seasons.
It's a long
wait.
It's
a long fucking development process. Mm. But yeah, that's the episode.
He has a cat. Is there anything weird about Mr. Poopy Butthole having a cat?
What is he called a cat?
What does he call the cat?
I mean, he's Mr. Poopy Butthole. Like, that's a perfectly good cat name, actually.
Doug? I don't know.
Or he calls him Beth.
Oh, that's weird.
That,
what does he do
weird.
To this poor cat?
I don't know, because he's trying to teach himself to love again. So he loves his kid, and he calls it Geth. Like, this is how I'm going to forgive Beth. I'm going to associate her because he's such a good, wise, loving person. He's transferring all of his love and affection so he can learn to love Beth again. Because, you know, he's been a trusted family friend, and you don't throw that away just because someone shoots you.
That's true. Unconditional love, Mr.
Unconditional love, right. Mr. Poopy Butthole's got it knocked down.
And I forgot my favorite line of the episode is right before this tag, right at the very, very end. It's Jerry shouting, "I got a job, honey."
Yeah. Well, they've been wanting him to do it, you know, this whole time. Now it's like, so does he cut ties with Taddy Mason, or does he just go double down?
Yeah, he doesn't have time for Taddy.
He's got coworkers to annoy now, to have awkward conversations where they're desperately sending the signals that we're done talking, and he just obliviously continues to talk about his golf game.
Do you remember what his job was? I can't remember. Marketing?
Yeah.
Well, no, I mean the new job he's got. Did they say what it is? Or
no, I don't think they have revealed.
Okay.
Intergalactic sales and marketing?
Maybe, yeah.
Golf tutoring?
Ooh.
That'd be funny if golf became the new sport phenomenon in the universe, and there people are desperate for people for lessons. So, like, even marginal or below marginal golfers like Jerry.
I mean, he's got to have Beth behind him the whole way, though.
That's true. Yeah, she's the real power behind the golf throne.
Jazz rapping for an alien mile. Fat beats and an alien smile. Jazz space phone alien dial is my friend.
Here are the highlights coming up this week on Bald Move.
House of the Dragon Season 2 is coming up sooner than you think. And to get us all back in that Leal state of mind, Aaron and I have teamed up with Maester Anthony to bring you coordinated coverage, new and old. For the next 10 weeks leading up to Season 2, Maester Anthony will be releasing an episode of his Season 1 coverage on the Hot D podcast. He originally recorded and released it exclusively on his Double Dragon podcast, so while it's retro coverage, it's almost certainly new to you.
In addition, each Friday, Jim and I will be reading the relevant sections of George Martin's Targaryen history book, Fire and Blood, so that we can compare and contrast it to that week's episode of Hot D Season 1. So grab a copy of Fire and Blood and read along with us if you're so inclined. Just don't read ahead unless you enjoy spoilers.
If that's not enough to satisfy your craving for fantasy entertainment, well, you're in luck. We recently watched King Arthur, Legend of the Sword, which is Guy Ritchie's uniquely stylish and anachronistic riff on the King Arthur legend. Yes, Guy Ritchie took on the most famous of all English legends and did it with huge ambitions. Sadly, or perhaps thankfully, depending on your tastes, his ambitions were cut short by meager audience interest. Join us for the podcast this Tuesday as we discuss why that might have been and whether this retelling is any good.
You can find these and many other great podcasts by searching for Bald Move Pulp or Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app. We're about 10 weeks out from House of the Dragon Season 2, and it's time to prepare for war.
Which in our case means, well, watching a lot of Hot D and reading a lot of Fire and Blood.
Each week between now and June 16th, Maester Anthony and his co-host Steve are hosting a watch of each episode of Hot D Season 1. And then me and Jim are going to host a discussion of the differences between the events on that episode and how they're recounted in George R.R. Martin's historical tome, Fire and Blood.
That's right, I've resorted to reading dragon books. God help us all. We'll see if my fresh eyes add any new insights or predictions into Season 2.
Arm yourselves with all the lore you can for the battles ahead. House of the Dragon returns June 16th, but we've got you covered until then.
Check out all of our upcoming Hot D coverage on the Hot D feed or on Bald Move Pulp, available wherever you listen to podcasts.
All right, Jim, are you ready to plot to the future?
I am.
This is, of course, where we take our portal guns, open a portal to Dimension BM77 to access behind-the-scenes trivia, details, spoilers for future episodes. I always struggle with portal and portal gun being so close together. Too many portals. But we've opened that. It has been opened.
I could not wait to hear just how hot Justin thought summer was this episode. And he did not let me down in the commentary.
He mentioned it. I didn't write it down.
In her wedding attire.
Maybe because I'm not sure how I feel about the whole...
No, I don't like it. I think it's weird. It's creepy. But, you know, that's Justin's thing.
It's an animated character. And
She's underage. And it's a little strange.
It is weird. What was she wearing?
I think she was just wearing like a nice dress instead of her usual, you know, pink top, white pants.
Someone pointed out... to the extent that I ever found Summer attractive, someone pointed out that she literally is just Jerry with a ponytail.
I saw this. Somebody swapped the face.
Pointed out, it's like one of those things like, oh, cannot unsee.
Yeah. And I saw the image of it swapped and it's right on.
She got none of the Beth genes from the neck down anyway.
Morty just Beth without long hair?
I don't think so.
I know. I'm sure he's not.
Because he's got no neck. There's a lot of differences.
Bulging eyes, like...
Yeah, when's Morty going to develop a neck?
Never.
Never?
I don't think he's going to change in physical appearance very much.
That's probably right. There's a lot of cool, like, you know, things to kind of hook your Mytharc teeth into, or talons, claws into, tentacles if you've got them. Like the statement where Birdman's finest day was on Blood Ridge on Gap Flap's third moon against the Gromflamites. I wonder if we'll ever see any of these flashbacks, kind of like, you know, like Firefly, if they flash back to the Battle of Serenity Valley.
Bird person's mind blowers.
Oh, but
this wouldn't be a removed memory.
Yeah.
So you couldn't really do that. But yeah,
I think they mentioned in a previous commentary how Dan had not seen Firefly or hasn't seen Firefly, but they talked about working with Alan Tudyk. I would love to see like that if they ever do a flashback, I would love to see it as like essentially it's Firefly.
That would be cool. Yeah.
Like Rick is obviously Mal, maybe Bird Person is Walsh. Oh no, he'd probably be the Shepherd. The way he's kind of like stoic and wise.
He'd be Shepherd.
Squanchy is Jane. Gotta be Jane.
Squanchy.
The loose cannon.
Okay, I like it.
And then like it would be like maybe you get Unity is like the I forgot. I'm trying to blank.
Shit. Yeah. Inara? The Inara?
Is that the companion?
That sounds right, but I'm drawing a blank too.
So you still got a couple Kaylee and...
Summer could be Kaylee.
Yeah, but like I'm thinking this is olden days, right? This is like, I want a flashback to when they were like this first, like what sparked it? What was their Serenity Valley?
Ageless. I don't know how Blood Ridge. That lines up, but yeah.
Maybe that's a... If Bird Person...
Unity could be all of them, honestly.
That's true.
Like, you could have Unity as Kaylee and Inara and Jane. Like,
what is that? Yeah. So, like, that would be kind of a... What's the social commentary on you have one female playing all the female roles?
Ooh, yeah, that could get weird.
Yeah.
You have to mix it up.
Yeah, yeah. But I love the idea of like more or less a straight up Firefly parody.
That'd be cool.
Which is probably a lame idea and you couldn't make 23 minutes of cartoons is why that I'm not making Rick and Morty, but I'm just saying.
I think you could.
Blood Ridge, Serenity Valley, I see it. I can see it. I want to see it.
Another thing I got from the commentary that I thought was interesting is they were talking about how when they went through the scanner to come back to Earth.
The tongue verification.
Yeah, yeah. They were scanning Morty, and at first they were thinking, okay, well, let's... Morty is not from this universe, right? This dimension.
Yes.
He's, you know, C-137 Morty from the Cronenberg universe or dimension. Let's have them notice that and try and deport him, essentially. And then they realized, that would give the Federation a lot of power with interdimensional travel.
Right.
Something we don't really want to do, even though we sort of hinted at that with interdimensional customs earlier.
Yeah, we talked about that in the early days of the podcast, like 3 weeks ago.
And so they didn't want to give, essentially, Rick's knowledge to the government.
Right.
Because that kind of defeats the purpose of them needing to go after Rick for this portal technology.
Like, they obviously
that kind of
know
stuff.
That Rick is dangerous, and I think they even know there's multidimensional versions of him, but, like, they have no way to detect it.
Right.
Like, if they've got, like, any particular Rick at any particular time.
And I think it's a good call, because it stays within sort of the continuity and the canon that I've seen from the show.
No, it puts Rick in that Doctor Who category where he's just on another level from most of the galactic the foes and things that he meets.
Yeah.
And I like that a lot. There's a lot of
and also like I guess they couldn't have done the second part of this episode, which is the season three opener, right? Because they're all about getting his portal tech.
Right.
That wouldn't be a thing if they already had, you know, interdimensional travel.
Yeah. But also, like, the big question I have, and this is kind of related to this conversation, is did Rick have a genuine change of heart at the end of the episode? Because the season three opener makes it pretty clear that this was a plan to... He did this entire thing just because Jerry beat him in a family argument.
Uh-huh.
That Jerry had every right to win and was dead right on. And he goes on this insane revenge arc that brings in the Council of Ricks, the Federation. But ultimately, the target is Jerry and destroying his place in the Smith family as the patriarch so that Rick can supplant himself. So it makes me wonder, because I wonder if like one of the other hooks they had in mind is like Rick... What had a genuine change of heart. He's in prison. Morty gets tongue verified and they're threatening to deport him or they're holding him for questioning or something. And Rick's like, you know what? If you guys, I'm going to come out just to rescue my grandson. And they came up with the idea. I mean, I'm so glad that they booted the second half of this into season three because they spent all of this time. And when you see, obviously, the season three opener, holy shit.
It's incredible.
Like a fucking... Rube Goldberg plot device to just so efficiently resolve this. I'm glad they did, but there's a lot of these kind of off ramp. You can see these off ramps to previous versions of this episode, and you can. They must have thrown away so many almost complete script versions because the idea that this was going to be a vacation to Squatch World, that like the second act would reveal we're actually not on vacation. We can't ever go back because I'm on the run. And each act was going to be a self-contained kind of like Squatch story. Like I love the idea of Summer having like a summer relationship. No pun intended with a Squatch person. And the Squatch person's like, hey, you know, we're not big on labels. We just, you know, I squanch you, you squanch me, and she squanches him back. But then later on, he turns super possessive and's like, you said that we were squanch, you know. And I thought that was funny and that Jerry would do well in squanch politics because being a politician is speaking in vague platitudes and making everybody think that you're saying what they want to hear. Mm-hmm. And the word squanch, like Jerry doesn't have any clue of what he's talking about. And he's just giving these speeches with squanch and like the squanch
they're
people
all
like
horrified. Yeah.
Oh no. Or no, not horrified. They're the joke is going to be like, they're like, oh, this guy really speaks to us. He's got an answer for all of squanch because he's just,
but the answer is just squanch.
Right. Right. Yeah. But like, if you squanch with no idea of what you actually mean by squanch, it can mean anything. I love.
Yeah. They do
an
example of that with Beth in this episode, which horrifies Squanchy.
And that's literally the only surviving segment of the original version of the script.
Wow.
I thought that was, yeah, it was like that was the one thing. And because they said it's like, oh, that would be so stupid to have 23 minutes of just Squanch jokes. But like, I don't know, man. I kind of wanted to see some of those.
Try it.
Yeah, yeah.
What's the worst that could happen? Everyone decides they don't want to watch your show anymore.
Right. I guess that is literally the worst thing.
That's the
cost of fear that probably I think you just stated it. No one will ever watch the show.
There's another tie into future episodes here with Tammy killing Bird Person. Like, I'm struggling to figure out why Tammy kills Bird Person and then in the next episode just brings him right back, right? As essentially Ro-Bird cop.
Right. Phoenix Person.
Yeah, Phoenix Person. Any ideas? Is this like part of the plan or is this like an improvisation after killing Bird Person? They're like, she's like, oh, I could use Bird Person's body.
Yeah. Like it seems like Tammy probably I imagine she has a lot of rage because she is like obviously one of these like Red Sparrow types that has been trained to seduce this person and she doesn't want to do it. And she's obviously been doing some pretty degrading shit. And that the idea that you would use his best friend, his best man, and you'd build him into some kind of purpose-built Rick killing machine. I mean, that's a fucking great hook.
Mm-hmm.
That's like Locutus of Borg.
So you think he's coming back as like a villain to challenge Rick later?
Got to. And I think I'm excited for the arc that like, are they going to redeem Bird Person? Is it going to be one of those things where Bird Person regains control of himself long enough to have a noble sacrifice? Or are we ever going to see like bio Bird Person again? Or is it all going to be cyborg Bird Person?
Yeah.
Phoenix person, I should say. Speaking of the whole Tammy plan, they had this talk about like what we were talking about in the non-spoiler section, where it's like, does this plot, like Dan asked the question, did we actually write up to this? Did we, you know, did, like, are there enough tracks to connect that people will buy that Tammy's this double agent? And he had this idea that like what they should have done is had like, you know, the Lethal Weapon scene, or the buddy cop scene where her superior at the Federation is reaming her out for what a cowboy she is, and like, you put the whole operation in jeopardy and you're trying to do this big ra-. That would have probably made things go, like any questions I had about the plot would probably have been addressed just by the fact that, like, by Federation standards, this was a crazy plan. And yeah, it led to a high profile fiasco, and the show addresses that. So they also, Justin shouted out like this really cool bounty hunter looking dude. Reminds me of, which was the big bug eyed bounty hunter from Empire Strikes Back? I used to have all these guys memorized, and I fell out of love of Star Wars.
I think it's Bosk.
Dengar? It started with Z. Zusk?
Oh, yeah. That sounds right.
Yeah. If not, write in.
I think you're right.
To Rick and Morty at baldmove.com and let us know.
I remember like every other one.
You know, what comes out later this year, The Mandalorian.
Yeah.
Whole new science fiction series to spoof. I would love to see, like, if spoof were worthy, I would love to see an episode about just this guy. And it's just a long kind of like ribbing of Disney's take on The Mandalorian.
Yeah, I mean, we'll be right alongside both of those shows.
Right.
So
a nice crossover opportunity here from a Bald Move perspective. And The guy's design was super fucking cool. There's another interesting point that I thought about, kind of Rick's bizarre seeming behavior on the tiny planet, where he was just like all about the tiny planet. And Dan pointed out that this is like Rick running on shame as fuel, because this is obviously something that Rick thinks sucks, that they're all stuck together on this fucking tiny planet, but he's making this big show of like how excited and how jonesy is about it, because if he made it seem like it sucks, then his family can attack him.
Right.
But if he's like, yo, fuck Earth, this is even going to be better than Earth, look at all the, you know, I thought that was an interesting character point. And then one final thing, they in this season in the commentaries, they've mentioned about like, you know, if you're watching, listen to this commentary while you're working. And I said, it's like, I felt like that really spoke to me. I felt attacked in this episode, because Justin's like, his description of the people who are watching this at work, not super flattering, because he's like, whatever they're doing, they're just fucking it up.
I mean, he's not wrong. Like, I mean, you're dividing your attention to the point where you probably aren't doing your best job.
But if your job is to watch the show and talk about it.
Oh, yeah, we're doing a great job.
Oh,
we're doing a great
so?
Job. Now, this tiny planet is amazing. We've built a great planet here. We're going to live on it forever.
I feel like we've deforested the whole planet with just the first two seasons of podcasting.
Who needs trees?
Did you need podcast bacon? Because we're out of that, too.
No, I'm going vegan.
All right, well, I'm just saying, I feel like our season three the planet is bare. We're gonna need help. We're gonna need some help to make this tiny podcast planet a success in season three.
Pickle Me This is distributed by Bald Move in association with Starburns Audio. It's produced by Jason Smith and Scott Porch from Starburns, and myself, Ben Aaron from Bald Move. All music featured on this podcast is from the Rick and Morty soundtrack, available from Sub Pop Records. Please subscribe, rate, and review us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. To discover the many other great shows we do, please check out baldmove.com and starburns.audio. If you appreciate what we do and want to directly support us, consider joining our club at club.baldmove.com to get access to exclusive bonus audio and video features. Finally, you can follow us on your favorite social media at Bald Move. See you next time.
Cliffhanger!